John 13, let's take a look at verses 1 and 2 again, and then verse 3 will be new material. Now, before the feast of the Passover, Jesus, knowing that his hour was come, that he should depart out of this world unto the Father, having loved his own that were in the world, he loved them unto the end. You remember what we said? He loved them unto the end means? He loved them. Well, option A would be he loved them until he goes back to heaven and then says, I'm done with you. Would that be a good explanation or not? No. So he loved them unto the end. If that can't mean that, then it must mean option B is he loved them. All right, totally, completely, full. It was an ongoing love, that eternal love. And then in verse 2, and during the supper, the devil having already put into the heart of Judas Iscariot, Simon's son, to betray him. Now verse 3, which is new material. Jesus, knowing that the Father had given all things into his hands, and that he came forth from God and goeth unto God. As you look at verse 3 initially, it might seem like, wow, there's a lot here and it's a little difficult to break down. But it's not all that difficult if you realize that we have three basic statements being made. In this verse, you have a reference to Jesus' authority. He had all things in his hand. You also find here a reference to Jesus' origin, where he came from. And you also find, as far as the third point, Jesus' final destination. He said that he was going to go back to the Father. In the middle of the verse, we're told that Jesus came forth from God. Well, what's that another way of saying? If he came forth from God, then that's a way of saying he is God. He was that essence. He was part of the Godhead. And that's why John was able to say he came from God. He was of God. He was out of God, if you will. Well, if that's true, then when he goes back to heaven, where's he going to go? He's going to go unto God. He's going to go back. If that's where you're coming from, then it makes perfect sense to say that you're going to go back. And as you look at these two statements, you have some information that helps you understand how the verse begins. The Lord was someone, John 13:3, who had lived a perfect life. He was a sinless man, and he knew, perfect tense, that the Father had given all things into his hands. This is not the first time that Jesus made this statement. It's also made back in the book of John, chapter 3, verse 35. Now, the Lord knows where he came from. He knows where he's going. He knows how much authority he has. And while he's got everything squared away, what about the disciples? What about the apostles? They have everything squared away?
No.
And we've talked about that in the last class or so. They were at the Passover meal. Jesus is ready to institute the Lord's Supper, and there's that squabble that we saw back in Luke chapter 22. They're arguing. There is dissension over who is the greatest. Luke chapter 22, verse 24. And Jesus, Luke 22, verses 25 through 27, in fairly rapid order, gives them a series of illustrations to say, out there in the world, the Gentiles, they lord it over others. They've got benefactors. People want to be praised. People want to be honored. But he says concerning himself, what happened with me? Came down from the Father, and what have I done? I've become a servant. And now he's trying to prepare these men for the fact that he's going to go back to the Father. Verse 3, John 13, they're going to go out into the world, and Jesus wants them to be prepared for the fact that they now are going to serve. Now, if they've not gotten that at this point, he's talked to them about that at various times. He's talked about being a servant. He's talked about humility. He's talked about greatness in the kingdom, how that's achieved. But that really hasn't quite registered to the point where it needs to register. And the illustrations, Luke chapter 22, verses 25 to 27, haven't registered. If what you're doing isn't working, we recognize the principle today, what do you do? Got to try something else. Is Jesus going to try something else? Yes. In the following verses, John chapter 13, what do we read about? What body part? And what happens to it? All right, we read about the feet. And Jesus washes those feet. So we're going to see in just a moment, verses 4 and 5, he gets up from the Passover meal, he girds himself, he puts a towel around his body, and then he begins to wash the feet of the disciples. One source suggested, and this is, I think, thoughtful and maybe worth mentioning, he proposed the apostles seated themselves without washing their feet because no servant was available. And in this situation, I think that's understandable. He went on to mention it was difficult for each to wash his own feet. And no one was willing to assume this task because it would imply his inferiority with the group. Important point here. Do you think there are still people today that will not do something, that may refuse to do something because in their mind, that's in their head beneath them. Can you think of some examples? They may not say it, but they're thinking it.
In a work situation, if you ask them to file, do some filing, and they don't think that's in their job description, well, that's below me. I should be doing more important things. Yep. Fine.
All right. You have some clerical works. You know, and I pay somebody to answer the telephone. I'm not going to pick up the telephone. I'm not going to put that in the file cabinet. On a shop floor, there's a piece of paper. Supervisor says, I'm not going to pick that up. There's a bolt out there on the floor, a screw or something else, a hazard. Well, you know, call the materials handler and get them over here. That's their job. So people do have that attitude oftentimes in the workplace. What about in the neighborhood? You've got some neighborhoods around here that have a lawn service, walking by and see some weeds. Well, I'm not going to pull that weed, but I'll go in and I'll call the lawn service and have them come out and pull them. Are you kidding? So people do that kind of thing today. As I was looking at this material, I'm not sure who it was, but one source said when baseball was introduced in one of the Oriental countries, the crown prince was at bat. And he hit the ball, but then he had one of his servants run around the bases because running was beneath him. Now that actually happened. And that may be an extreme illustration, but it's a true illustration, I think, to demonstrate the fact that people often will look at certain things and say, that is beneath me. You can find some people sometimes, as with manual labor, they say, that's beneath me. You look at a man, for example, in a house where he's got a wife and there's some dishes that need to be done, there's some vacuuming that needs to be done, there's some dusting that needs to be done. Sometimes a guy doesn't do those things because he doesn't want to, and that's still probably not a real good reason. But that's not the same as saying dusting or vacuuming or doing the dirty dishes. That's beneath me. And the apostles seem to have kind of been in that same mindset here, Steve.
I was watching a documentary this past week about manor houses in Britain from the 1800s to World War I, and upstairs, downstairs, and all the class situation. And that's kind of what we're talking about. It's beneath them, and they had to servants. They had to, you know, not be seen. They would stay in their quarters. They were caught on the wrong staircase. They could dismissed right then and there. And they talked about the Titanic, and that was all about class. I mean,
yes.
There are people in first class that mostly survive. Second class, not so much. Third class, most always people got wiped out.
Yeah. It is bad, and right, and when you do, and that is a great illustration. As you're going through some of those things, what came to my mind too is: do you find a case every once in a while where somebody will not talk to another person because they think that individual is beneath them? It happens. So the apostles had to get over that kind of stuff. If they were going to work with some real poor people or some other people that were different from how they had lived their lives and so forth, Jesus says, you know, look. I've given you about 3.5 years of examples, and now it's, you know, your turn to, using the baseball expression or illustration, you're going to have to run around the bases by yourself, and it is not beneath you. Marcia?
You said that they couldn't wash their own feet.
Well, it would have been...
They wouldn't wash each other's feet because that was beneath them, but why couldn't they wash their own? Was it not physically, or it was not psychologically and emotionally?
I think when you look at how the tables were arranged, and I believe that's the primary point that I would want to convey here, you've got a table that's probably about a foot off the ground, you're stretched out. So they could have washed their feet when they got there, that probably would have made a lot of sense, but if you're going to do that at the meal, which Jesus did, be very difficult to be kind of, you know, I mean, you probably could have gotten up. Yes. So you kind of get positioned, everybody wants, as we talked about before, it seems like there was kind of a mad dash for seats. Right, it was not physically incapacitated. Yeah, right, because we can bend over and take a cloth and, you know, do a pretty good job. But, yeah, so good question. Anybody else? All right, let's look at John 13, verses 4 and 5. Here's information about Jesus. He rises from the supper, lays aside his garments, took a towel and girded himself. Then he poureth water into the basin and began to wash the disciples' feet and to wipe them with the towel wherewith he was girded. This is the only time in the Bible where we read about Jesus washing the feet of the disciples. There could have been another time, but if there was, it's simply not recorded for us. And we've already discussed the purpose, the reason for this action in some of our earlier material. As we just talked about earlier, the disciples, the apostles, they're going to be key leaders in the church. And if they're not willing to serve, if they're not willing to demonstrate humility, that is going to create some huge, huge issues. Christ is about ready to establish his church. These fellows are going to be, Ephesians 2, verse 20, part of the foundation for that church. And Jesus says, it's now time for you to follow what I've done. Do you remember a little later, John chapter 17, verse 5, Jesus talked about the glory that he had before the world was. He laid aside that glory. A similar statement is made by Paul in Philippians chapter 2. Jesus emptied himself, he humbled himself, becoming obedient unto death, even the death of the cross. So Jesus sort of, you know, laid some things aside before he came to earth. And now, on this occasion, he's doing this very same thing once again, just hours before he dies. There is, somebody want to go back to John 10:15, and maybe want to keep your hand here, everybody, and go back to that passage as well. John 10, verse 15. We'll have that read. And who wants to take care of that for us? John 10, verse 15. Lois? Okay, you can, I think, see the connection very easily, but you might not normally make it. Jesus, in talking about his sheep, the people who want to become his people, what did he say he was willing to do for them? He was willing to lay down his life. Well, the word that's translated lay down in John 10:15, it's also translated with the word lay over here in John chapter 13, verse 4. Jesus was willing to lay aside his garments. Thus, when we think about Christ, it's really interesting. Lay aside, his glory, lay aside his honor, lay aside ultimately his life. And now also he's willing to lay down his life for his people as he lays down the garments. A couple of the quick points here. Jesus' decision to wash the feet of the disciples. Plus, if you look ahead a little bit, the information in verse 14 has caused some religious groups to say foot washing is to be a part of Christianity. Down there in verse 14 it says, if I then, the Lord and the teacher, have washed your feet, ye also ought to wash one another's feet. I'm going to make this point again, but I will mention it here because I think it's important. If I say to a child, you ought to do something, and to another child I say, you must do something, is there a difference? Yeah. Ought means what? Should. Must means you have an obligation. This is a duty. This is a responsibility that must be fulfilled. So Jesus did not say this must be done. Well, when we think about must, we do find that concept when it comes to Christianity, right? John 4. God is spirit, and they that worship him ought to worship in spirit and truth. No, that's not what it says. They must. So when you find that word must, we're dealing with something that God says this is essential, this is something that you have to do. Ought is in a different category. And it's in a different category because that's not the lesson that he's trying to teach here. It's not foot washing. Practice that in the church. But it is the service, it is the humility, and those related qualities. Consider this point as well. I'll say a little bit more about this, but if you were to walk back there in the first century, what would your feet typically be like, clean or dirty? All right, they're going to be dirty, and we'll explain that here in a little bit. But as you think about those dirty feet, now the apostles are in this room with Jesus. Would their feet have been dirty or clean? Dirty. Don?
Well, if you go to the next verse that you read.
Here's John 10 or 13, 15? Yeah.
For I've given you an example that you also should do. This is what I've done to you.
Mm-hmm.
Should is pretty powerful word.
Yeah, but what did he done? What did he do?
Showed humility.
All right, he showed humility, and that's what he's saying. This is what you need to do.
Yes.
So,
but it's an example.
Yes.
To show humility.
Yes.
And we believe that, you know, examples have weight in terms of the Bible.
Yes. Yeah. An example can be binding or not binding. In this particular case, we have a binding example, but we're also dealing with an illustration of something. So we want to make sure that we key in on the right point. Is it the foot washing or is it the humility?
No, it's the humility.
Exactly.
The act of foot washing.
Yes. And that word,
you know. That you shouldn't foot wash in the church, in the congregation. If the congregation wants to foot wash to show the act of humility, that the preacher, the the elders, the deacons, everybody washes each other's feet. There's nothing wrong with it.
Yeah. Let me add a point there to that. Let's build on what I was saying just a moment ago and tie it in with Don's statement here. First century, we're in this group. Would our feet have been dirty or would they have been clean? Dirty. Today, if we're in an assembly where we're going to practice foot washing, if you will, as Don mentioned, typically the feet are going to be dirty or they're going to be clean? Clean. If you really wanted to show humility, what would you do? Yeah, you'd come in with dirty, scummy, ugly feet.
No, I disagree.
You disagree, okay.
Because you're washing the feet not to clean your feet, but as an act of humility. And Jesus wasn't washing your feet to clean your feet. He was washing the feet to show humility.
You don't think he was washing the feet to clean them?
No, otherwise he would have said that. Basically, it's humility that he's showing that the leader is also the servant.
Okay, I'll see what Ray says and then we'll come back to that.
I agree with you. I think there's humility. But also when they're at that table, their feet are almost at the same height as the table.
Mm-hmm.
So I really wouldn't want to sit at the table with 30 feet laying right next to the table.
Yeah. So you do have, based on what you just said, you do have a cleanliness issue, that he was trying to clean the feet. And yet today when we look at religious groups that do that, I think a lot of people would say, you know, if it's... putting some water on feet that are relatively clean, a lot of people would object to that. But if you've got dirty feet, if you've got gangrene on the feet, or you've got some other stuff, some nasty stuff, I think the interest in foot washing would vanish and vanish quickly. Sherman?
To go along with what Don was saying, verse 7, it kind of further explains it. You know, he said, you don't really understand it, but you will later on. Well, if it was to clean their feet, they would have understood.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. And there are two words in the Greek text for no there. So you just hold on to that thought. We're going to kind of come back to that. But that is a great point. Thank you for speaking up.
Well, it wouldn't have necessarily, or it doesn't seem to me like it would have been in this particular case for cleanliness sake because he did it after supper. So why would he have waited till after supper? Cleanliness was the issue.
Okay, you missed the classes, but as we went through this sequentially, in Luke chapter 22, you have during the midst of the supper, there is this confrontation, there is this discussion. So they came in with dirty feet, he's given them some illustrations that apparently hasn't helped, now it's kind of, let's step it up a bit, let's give an illustration which will help you realize the importance of humility. In this culture, this was a job for servants. It wasn't a job for equals. And it was something that was degrading in maybe a limited sense. And it was also something that was necessary. They didn't have the kinds of shoes that we have now. They didn't wear socks in this day and time. There were no stockings that people wore. And the sandals, they would have helped protect the feet from things like sharp objects. They would have protected the feet from things like rocks. But, you know, as you're out there, anybody ever, you know, worked out in a dusty environment? Really dusty? You know, you come in and you are just covered, you know, maybe with some sweat, and you're just covered with dirt, and it's like caked on you. Well, these people walked, oftentimes. There were no cars, there were no motorcycles, the things that we enjoy today. And you've got, in this climate, it's hot. And you're out there, you're walking, kind of like the Old West, the dirty, dusty streets, and that dust is clinging to you. You're dirty. You may have washed the rest of the body, and it's kept fairly clean by clothing. But the feet are really dirty. So this was a practical matter. Dust and grime would have quickly gathered on the feet. And for the people to either be clean or for the people to feel clean, this was something that was needed. Another thing that we need to, I think, look at here, it's beneficial to us, comes from some Old Testament references. A lot of people, I think, have the idea that foot washing didn't come around until New Testament times. That's simply not true. Do you know that we read about the washing of feet in the book of Genesis? First book of the Bible talks about foot washing. Let's go back and see the references. Let's get somebody headed over to Genesis 18, 1 to 4. All right, Betty, Brian, let's head you over to Genesis 24, 32. Genesis 24, 32. And then let's also have somebody head over to 1 Samuel 25, 41. 1 Samuel 25, verse 41. Steve. Now, I cite these passages, and we could give more. But I cite these three because Genesis is obviously a time period prior to the law of Moses. And then from 1 Samuel chapter 25, verse 41, David and Abigail, that's the context of that chapter. We are now under the law of Moses. Genesis 18, 1 to 4. Usually when people talk about foot washing, they ignore the fact, they pretend like this verse isn't in the Old Testament. But it is there. And it is by no means the only one. Genesis 24:32. Brian, let's look at this one.
And the man came into the house, and he ungirded his camels, and gave straw and provender for the camels, and water to wash his feet, and the men's feet that were with them.
Okay. Again, you can see we're dealing with the same part of the world. Water was brought. It's specifically tied in with foot washing. We're also going to have in just a moment 1 Samuel 25, 41 read, but let's head somebody else over to one more passage, and this is going to come from the book of Luke, certainly in Jesus' day and time, Luke 7, verse 44. Who wants to take care of that one in just a minute? Luke 7, verse 44. All right, Josh. Before we get to there, 1 Samuel 25, verse 41.
And she arose and bowed herself with her face to the earth and said,
okay. This passage ties in what I said earlier. When you have this task being described, it's a very lowly task. It's a very menial task. And here you have it specifically associated with the word servant. Before Josh reads Luke 7:44, let's get one more volunteer. And this passage will be important because it falls under the New Testament dispensation. 1 Timothy chapter 5, verse 10. 1 Timothy 5:10. Who wants to get that? Jeff. All right, Josh, if you're ready. Luke 7, verse 44.
Then turning towards the woman, he said to Simon, do you see this woman? I entered your house. You gave me no water for my feet, but she has wet my feet with her tears and wiped them with her hair.
Okay, a couple of things stand out from this passage. Marcia, one of the points that you made earlier, couldn't they wash their feet? Well, Luke 7, 44 indicates that that was possible. She made water available. She recognized that the guests could come in and right there at the door take care of that need so it wouldn't track up the house. But in the situation that we're describing in John 13, it seems that these disciples, you know, just headed off to the table to get a good spot. And then, you know, well, somebody could come around and wash your feet. Well, not me. That's beneath me and so forth. So your observation was right. And this gives it a little better context when you pick up what we have in Luke 7, verse 44. So here, Luke 7, 44, Jesus actually mentions this culture not as a religious thing, but it was designed because of the culture, the climate, and so forth. That dirt literally clung to the feet. Then, as you think about foot washing in the New Testament, whenever you have in the New Testament, and I think you can make the same argument for the Old, if God has said this is something that's associated with Christianity, you always find that it's regulated. For example, is giving regulated? Are there some regulations about giving?
Just two gifts that we're all supposed to give.
All right, you have those regulations. Do we have regulations on the spirit of giving? Okay, so we've got clear guidance there. What about some information on when Christians meet? Do we have some guidance on that topic? On the first day of the week, God's people came together. Do we have some guidance on preaching? Teaching? Preach the word. Well, okay, that sounds pretty specific. Do we have some guidance on music in the New Testament? Yes. So whenever God has given a command like that, you do have those additional instructions. If foot washing were something that Jesus intended for Christians to do throughout the New Testament era as something that is part of the church, the worship, for example, if it were intended for that time, then if God were consistent, he would also have legislated that. But we don't have the legislation for this, but we do have legislation for other things. We do have, outside of this passage, John 13, just one more place in the New Testament where we read about foot washing. And this is 1 Timothy chapter 5, verse 10. And we want to look closely at this verse. One of the things that we want to see is what foot washing, what if anything, is associated with foot washing in this passage. 1 Timothy 5, verse 10.
And having a reputation for good works, if she's brought up children, has shown hospitality, has washed the feet of the saints, has cared for the afflicted, and has devoted herself to every good work.
Okay, now as you look at this New Testament passage, foot washing is mentioned, but it's mentioned, comma, in most translations that I'm aware of, at least. And then what's listed next? Foot washing, and then?
Caring for the afflicted.
Well, isn't there something before that? Hospitality. So, as you look at this, 1 Timothy 5:10, Paul makes a connection between hospitality and the washing of feet. Well, that's what we saw in Luke 7:44. That's what we saw in Genesis 18, Genesis 25, or Genesis 24, and also back there in 1 Samuel chapter 25. So, if we look at the context where foot washing is used, again, I would not say, as Don mentioned earlier, that if somebody wants to do that, that's not sinful. But let's make sure that we do understand from a biblical perspective what it was designed for, that time, that culture, and we're not in that situation today because of footwear and the roads that we have and some other things. Anything that you want to add or ask, Brian?
Because I see it sort of like anything else we might try to do, like we're going to have a potluck and try to only use Bible foods in this potluck. We're trying to sort of immerse ourselves into that culture, maybe understand a little bit better. Doing that kind of thing, foot washing, maybe it might be helpful that way too.
Yeah.
It'd be similar in my mind to doing something like that.
When we draw things out from Bible examples, that's one of the ways that God has authorized us and teaches us to do things. But when we look at those examples, we have to make sure that it's an example that's binding on us today. For example, we have in Acts 20, they were meeting in an upper room. No doubt that they did that. No doubt that that's an example. But the question is that a binding example? Do we have to meet in an upper room? Well, you kind of put two and two together. Well, let's see where they also met. Can we find a place maybe where they met on a single floor? Can we find a place where they met outside? And if you can find a place, for example, where they met outside, then you would say, well, we do have that example in Acts 27. They met in an upper room. But we know that that must have been a matter of circumstance. It was not something that Christ intended for his people to follow. And some of that's common sense. Most people, I think, would be able to look at that and say, well, the point there is probably not that we've got to meet in an upper room. Don, were you thinking, or you had a...
Well, I was thinking when you said binding, and when I mentioned this, I didn't infer that it was binding at all.
Sure, I know.
And so I want to make that perfectly clear. All I'm saying is that when Jesus said, for I've given you an example that you also should do just as I've done
yes.
to you, which is an act of humility, mm-hmm. and you might pick some other acts of humility that
yes.
a Christian could do, and no one should say that's sinful.
Right.
I'm a Christian to do that.
Yeah. How are we going to best fulfill humility, service, those commands? You know, what are going to be some ways that we do that? And there again, you have, on the one hand, a specific command. These are things that we need to have and display and do. But how are we going to do that? Well, God's not specified that and said, your humility is going to be shown by this way or that way. You know, you could potentially demonstrate humility. I don't think it would be very effective. But I'm a humble person. Get a badge and wear it. You know? I'm a true servant. Well, you could do that, but that's probably not going to be a real good reflection of that. But we're authorized to do that in a way that's expedient.
I agree. But here, Christ is showing you a specific example.
Yeah.
Show humility.
Yeah.
So, is it good to follow an example that Christ laid out for us?
Yeah. But remember the context, though. Genesis, 1 Samuel, and so forth. Yeah.
Well,
let's apply it to the weather. Is there a way, based on the area where we live, where you could show humility and especially service to fellow Christians?
Shovel their snow.
All right, that's going to be one. You probably have some people after they shovel out their snow. You know, you've got one of the winters like we had this year. I'm just whipped. Boy, I can't wait until he tries to knock it out. Just look at the big drifts over there. Ha, ha, ha. Well, that's probably not a very good attitude, right? What about when people pull up, slipping and sliding, and then you have the sister who's 75? Oh, let's wait and see how well she slips and slides across the parking lot. Boy, this is going to be fun. Now, I don't know if anybody would necessarily do that, but if we had the desire to be a servant of God, what would we do?
Look for opportunities?
Well, yeah, but in this specific case, what would we do? Rather than just say, let's watch the widow fall or not fall, how would we deal with the situation? All right, have her park. Have her come in under the overhang. And then we will go out, and if somebody's going to slip and slide, that's going to be us. So there are different ways to apply this, as Don mentioned. Don, something else there that you wanted to make mention of? Okay. Brian?
I remember in the high school class once it came up, someone asked, why don't we wash feet? And I was trying to make the point, we do wash feet in the church. Every time we do this and this and this, we're washing feet. These are acts of humility. That's what washing feet is. So yes, we do wash feet in the church every time we do those things.
As a world.
So like you used the word for autonomy, I think.
Yes.
That can be used in that way, that when we do acts of humility, it is washing feet.
You made a well thought out point. Good. All right, let's pick up then with verses 6 through 8, still in John chapter 13. Verse 6 says, So he cometh to Simon Peter. He saith unto him, Lord, dost thou wash my feet? Jesus answered and said unto him, what I do thou knowest not now, but thou shalt understand. King James there says and understands another word for know. Thou knows, or thou will know, or understand hereafter. Peter saith unto him, thou shalt never wash my feet. Jesus answered him, if I wash thee not, thou hast no part with me. It's not clear. From the English text, I think the Greek text is a little clearer, but even there I'm not still comfortable saying for 100% certainty that no feet had been washed prior to the time Jesus came to Peter. I think that's what happened. I believe that's what's being described, but I'm not 100% sure about that point. If that was the case, then there is no indication that any apostle had said anything up to this point. And if that is what occurred, I think that's understandable, because here you have the one that has done miracles, the one who has offered teaching like you've never heard before, and now he's doing this job, as we saw from 1 Samuel 25, verse 41, that a servant would do. Apostles apparently didn't want to do it. But here the Lord is willing to do that. And it's like today. If there's something taking place in a meeting, you've maybe got 12 or 15 people there, everybody's kind of watching to wait and see what's going to happen. But everybody's hesitant to speak up. But there may be one person in that meeting, there may be one person in that set of circumstances that finally decides that he or she is going to open his mouth, and that is what happens here. Peter, when it was his turn to have his feet washed, he asked if the Lord intended to wash his feet, and did Jesus intend to wash his feet? He did. So, it is a practice that has been, used for a long time, as we saw from the book of Genesis. Even in fairly modern times, if you go back a couple hundred years, you find it. One source pointed out how foot washing was a practice of nobility in England until 1731. King James II was the last monarch to practice this activity. So here, as we look at what was taking place, John 13, verses 6 through 8, Jesus hears Peter's question. Does he give this apostle a simple answer, yes or no? No. Jesus certainly could have done that, but Jesus said, you don't understand what I'm doing. But a time is going to come when you will grasp, when the others too, but here the point is specifically related to Peter, you will come to a time where you can grasp what was taking place. Well, I think Sherman's point that he made earlier about verse 7 is thoughtful. If it was just about the washing of feet, Peter could have gotten that, because that's what was done in this particular culture. So that's a hint, that's an indication that something else was going on. And Jesus was trying to get through the thick skull of this fella and the others as well, that humility, service, his people were going to be much different than those in the world. Now, if you look at the King James, as said, that translation uses the word no twice. The ASV and maybe some other translations will have it once, and then you may have a second word, something like understand. And there's a reason for that. There are two words for know in the Greek text, and they are different words. The first word described absolute knowledge. The first word described complete knowledge. That makes sense, doesn't it? Jesus said you don't know. You don't have what kind of knowledge? You don't have full knowledge. You don't have a complete understanding. There are some things about what I'm doing that you don't yet grasp. Well, what was that? You're going to have to be a servant. You're going to have to follow the lead that I have given you. And that second word that's translated know or understand, it means knowledge gained by experience. Do you think Peter and the other apostles were going to gain some understanding of humility? You get locked up in the prison cell and beaten. Good lesson in humility. Chased out of town, stoned, called hateful names by people. Church problems. Yeah, these fellows were going to get a really good illustration and finally reflect back on what Jesus was trying to teach them. So even at this point, the apostles, they had made great spiritual progress. They were going to be even better leaders in the future. But at this juncture, they still didn't have everything figured out. Now, in my mind, that's a helpful lesson. Preachers are often guilty of this. Elders can be guilty of this. But you can look at another person, and I think every Christian can fall into the same category. We can look at a person, just like a parent will look at a child, and say, he or she should know better. Well, that's true. Shouldn't Jesus' disciples have known better? Absolutely. But still, they didn't get it. Did the Lord write them off and say, well, I know it's kind of late in the game, but I'm going to find some new guys? No. He said, you're going to get it finally. But there is going to be a little bit of a learning curve. So I'm trying to help you while I'm still with you. And, you know, eventually this will all get sorted out. Jesus, as you look at his response to Peter, it was a fairly gentle correction. But Peter had what kind of nature?
Impetuous.
All right, impetuous. Would you also say, based on what we have here, that he was a little stubborn? Yeah. Jesus comes along and, I'm going to wash your feet, and he says, not only no, but in the Greek text there is a double negative used. Now, usually a double negative is bad English, but it's very helpful in the Greek text. One source described the forcefulness of the thought in this way: you shall by no means wash my feet so long as the world stands. Yeah, huh? That's the thought that Peter expressed to Jesus. There is no way, come heaven or hell, that you're going to wash my feet. That was stiff. Well, when you have somebody respond to you with that kind of language, if you're Jesus, what do you have to do? You're going to have to go ahead and give it back to him in a pretty potent way. And this is exactly what Jesus did. The Lord said, I've heard you, but if you don't permit me to wash your feet, what's going to be true? Yeah. And notice the verb there. You, I think the ASV says had. Lois, you have the New American Standard?
You have no part of it.
Have. That does H-A-V-E. Yes. There's a difference between had and have. What's have mean as far as tense? Ongoing. And it is the present tense that's used here. Jesus says, if you reject this ongoing action, you're not going to have any fellowship with me. You're not going to have any inheritance with me. We're going to have to part company. Well, as you look at the idea that foot washing, and that's, as Don said, that's not what we're talking about here as far as a requirement. But for the groups that do seem to have that idea that it is an essential part of Christianity, as I look at verse 8, it would seem to me that you would have to, in that group, say that this is something that's required. Because Jesus says, if I don't wash your feet, then you've got no part. So if you believe that foot washing really is something that God has said you've got to do, then it would seem to me that it is is by no means an optional thing. And as we said before, that view is problematic because there's not a single verse in the New Testament that regulates that passage or that idea, but everything else is regulated. They did need to practice humility. They did need to practice service. God's people today need those same kinds of things. Remember Romans 12, verse 1, I beseech you, brethren, therefore, by the mercies of God, to present your bodies a living sacrifice. Well, if you are a living sacrifice, are you going to show humility? Are you going to be willing to serve? You know, sacrifice is humble. Sacrifice is being offered. So, Paul preached this same message a little later. There is one other quick point I think we can make, which I think is thoughtful. When we have a truly close relationship with somebody, will we allow them to do something for us? I think so. And that may have been also part of Jesus' thought. Here we have a close relationship. This is something that I need to do for you. It's something that's necessary. But sometimes people say to a person, oh no, I don't want you to do that. I don't want any help. But generally that's going to indicate a relationship that's not really all that close. Additional thoughts that you want to have before we start verses 9 and 10? Okay. 5 minutes and some thunder. So let's at least begin that. In verse 9 it says, Simon Peter saith unto him, Lord, not my feet only, but also my hands and my head. Jesus saith to him, he that is bathed needeth not save to wash his feet, but is clean every whit. And ye are clean, but not all. We know that Peter was a somewhat impulsive character. We saw that back in Matthew chapter 16, where Jesus talked about the crucifixion that he was going to face, his upcoming death. And Peter said, no, you know, that's not going to happen to you. Then in the next chapter, Matthew chapter 17, we have the transfiguration. He probably should have kept his mouth shut, but he opens his mouth and says, Lord, it's good for us to be here, and wanted to build some booths, some little shelters, and that didn't work out too well for him. And now Peter, he hears Jesus say, you're not going to have, present tense, any part of me unless I wash your feet. So you have to love Peter, but you also have to kind of put up with him a bit. So he's gone from, remember that statement? What did he say about washing the feet?
Never.
Never, ever, as the world stands. This is something that will never happen. And then, 2 minutes later maybe, what's he say? Wash me all. Wash all of me. You know, that almost makes the head spin. And I might have, had I been Jesus, that probably wouldn't have been true, but thinking, did I really pick the right guy? But he did have, as far as personalities, when you look at the apostles, he had some very, very different personalities. And yet the Lord didn't try to say, well, I favor you above you, or I'm going to keep you and throw you out because I like your personality better. What did he say? You're going to have to work together. You're going to have to all be my disciples, and you're going to have to work for the common thing. Isn't that a great lesson for local congregation? When you get more than about 25 people in a group, you're going to have people who have drastically different personalities. And in the work world, that doesn't always work out too well. People sometimes say, I can't work with him, can't work with her, I'm going to quit. I'm going to find a new job. I'm going to pray that they don't show up for work after tomorrow. You know, today is just the last day, the last straw for me. But in the church, you know, God values all of his people, and we need to do our best to make sure that we try to get along with others. And if we've got that common commitment, that common goal, then certainly that's going to be possible. Anything you want to add or ask? Dolores?
When you read this, you kind of look at Jesus with his disciples around the table as if they were all his kids.
Yeah.
Because each of your kids have different talents and different personalities and different characteristics. And, you know, you appreciate each and every single one for what they are special for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And some are going to be less troublesome than others. Some you never have a problem with, and others it seems like you're on them all the time. And Peter, not in a bad sense, but it seems like Jesus had to do his fair share of correcting when it came to Peter, but still loved him to death. So, an excellent illustration. No.
I wonder if John got to get grasp of some of the essence of this little action that Jesus did, because wasn't he the one that always wanted to be by Jesus, and he was laid at Jesus' bosom at the supper?
Yeah, that inner circle may have had some real problems with that, because if they'd experienced some things that the others did not, and people being people, that could have been real tempting if they didn't verbalize it to at least say, look, somebody once suggested that when you begin to, we're going to conclude, but when you think, well, we're part of the inner circle. Judas, do you think that there was a way that he could have argued for greatness on his part? I'm the treasurer. Out of all the guys that could have been picked to hold the money, who did Jesus pick? He picked me. I'm the money man. A person like Matthew could have boasted, I'm a tax collector. Look at all the money, you know, that I gave up to follow Jesus. So as you take a few details about the apostles, there were various things that they might have used to, in their mind, build themselves up and say, I'm one of the greatest. And yet Jesus, that seems to have been a struggle for more than a year. But he's just trying to quell that, trying to put that down time and time again. There are some interesting things in verse 10, which we'll not get to tonight, but we'll start off there next week. Again, Jesus said, he that's bathed, perfect tense, needs not save to wash his feet, but is clean every whit, and ye are clean. But then he said, not all were.